Okay, welcome back. Episode 2, we've made it. This week we're dipping our toes into coding.
Sounds good.
Welcome back, Jack.
Thank you. Welcome, Andy.
Yeah, nice. So we've started off with a quote.
Lay it on me.
Yeah, here we go. So it's actually from a movie. You're a bit of a film buff, so I expect great things from you here.
We'll see.
Okay. Can you learn stuff you haven't been programmed with so you could be, you know, more human? That's what I've got for you.
No idea what the movie is.
Yeah.
But it is a good question. What is it? What does coding do for us as humans? I don't know.
Yep.
That's cool. Well,
okay.
we'll delve into that. Where'd it come from?
It was actually Terminator 2. The great John Connor was talking to the Terminator, original Terminator. It's a memorable quote. Can't believe you can't remember it.
Very nice. Mm. And a favorite of all teachers around the world, bringing inspiration from Terminator.
Absolutely.
Nice. All right, so coding is the theme for today.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We're gonna talk about ways you can bring it into the classroom.
Yep.
And a little bit about what the point is. And we've also got our first interview today.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I look forward to that. Okay, so maybe we can start off by talking a little bit about, the why we should care about
the whys.
The whys. Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. I guess the most obvious one is that tech is going crazy. It's our future.
Yeah.
AI, whatever, these things are getting more and more, and we're going to need people to program them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a future job. Like, that's plain and simple.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's more to it, right? There's other benefits you get out of coding. Yeah. If you're not necessarily going to take a coding career, you can still take a lot from it. That's kind of your area.
Yeah, so I thought about it from a teacher's perspective and what can it bring to the students' lives. And one of the things that we sort of are trying to promote with our students is this idea of being problem finders.
Yeah.
And I think that through this process of coding, you have to be like finding these problems and fixing these problems. So it's not necessarily about the coding, but the skills that you learn from it, the problem solving skills that you bring to the table there.
Nice. Yeah, cool. And the other one I delved into a little bit when I was researching mm-hmm. is the idea that coding has traditionally been dominated by the industry. I mean, here,
yeah.
You know, male and white, right?
Okay.
And so as coding becomes more and more a part of our lives and affects the everyday,
yeah.
right? There's a need to have a better representation in that field. So, you know, more women involved, people of color, you know, different ethnicities, all this kind of stuff,
yeah.
Even different ages too. And one of the really good examples is like self-driving cars,
yeah.
right? And this idea of like, who's it going to hit in an accident
mm-hmm.
could be biased by who programmed it.
That's dangerous.
Well, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even on like the really unconscious level, you're going to end up building things in. So essentially, if codes are going to affect every person in the
yeah.
world, then every person in the world should be represented in who writes it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm on board with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big idea though for a teacher to kind of think about like ethics on a huge level, but we have a role in that. So yeah, kind of interesting.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. So shall we delve a little bit into the theory? And for me this week, it was like less theory, more finding out about computational thinking. That
yeah,
was
cool.
Sort of the natural place to go there.
Putting a minute on the clock.
Oh, yeah.
Theory in a minute.
panic.
Never worked.
Yeah, no.
All right, here we go. Yeah, tell us, so computational thinking. I don't know a lot about this, so.
Yeah, well, so I've sort of just had a little browse, and it's just a way to tackle a complex problem. It's a way to understand what the problem is and to develop possible solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that idea that it's possible solutions and it's not there is one right way of doing it.
Yeah,
and
nice.
I think that's really important for our students to know, and even myself to look for multiple solutions. So they break it down to these like four pillars or principles, and the first one there is decomposition. So that's just basically when you're looking at the big problem, and then you're just breaking it down into more manageable like mini problems, I guess.
Okay.
And then you move into pattern recognition. So as you're answering and dealing with these smaller problems, you're looking for commonalities, the similarities between the problems, and then you can move into abstraction where you're, I guess you're simplifying it because you're chucking out the things that you don't need, which is the point of the similarities, like, well, this information isn't important to be able to solve this problem. And then you get into the actual algorithm writing, so bringing the solutions on board and that.
Yeah, nice, cool. Nice. Yeah, sweet. And I guess another related sort of idea or model that we can look at is the design process, right? Mm-hmm. And so I quite like, I think it matches in nicely with coding, this iterative design process, right? The idea that it's a cycle, designing. Something like, you know, ideate, come up with an idea, prototype and build and evaluate, and then kind of looping back onto itself. So after you've evaluated, you go back to the drawing board or, you know, re-prototype or whatever it is, but you're going around in circles. And coding really, to me, has that built in because it's constantly checking, you know, writing something, testing it, fixing it, and, you know, you just kind of two steps forward, one step back kind of process as you go through. So yeah, it's nice.
Okay, that's cool.
And now we love the granddaddies on Risky Business.
Oh, yeah.
And so someone that comes across as the granddaddy of coding and education, Seymour Papert, MIT professor.
Okay.
And he was all about way back in the 60s, getting kids onto computers, right? I mean, imagine the days, like adults didn't even know anything about computers at that point, right? And so he was trying to get kids into it. He developed some languages early on, Logo.
Okay. I haven't really heard this.
Yeah. I guess it's defunct now, right? Yeah. But at the time, it seemed like it'd be pretty good. And he wrote the book on it, Mindstorms.
Like Lego.
Like the Lego. Yeah, yeah, okay. Inspiration for Lego, but you know, several, maybe a couple of decades before, he wrote this book, and it was all about the idea that don't let the, you know, computer program the child.
Yeah.
Right. We shouldn't learn the way that computers need to be used, and we have to follow that. It should be about the child programming the computer. So he was trying to get that all happening. And yeah, so things like Scratch, Lego Mindstorms, all come from his work.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. He is a granddaddy.
He is absolutely grandpaps.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So if you're going to persist with granddaddy, can we get a little like, at what decade are you just not the granddaddy anymore? Like,
you're just the father.
Just the father. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, this guy's working in the 60s, 80s, 90s.
Oh no.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on.
All right. Well, we've got a guest speaker this week.
Yeah, nice.
I mentioned it. So let's get our man Dalton on the phone.
Cool. So today we're lucky enough to have got in touch with a good buddy and get him on the show today. And this guy's Dalton Flanagan, and I had the pleasure of working with him for a long stretch. That's what it felt like. So we just pass over to Dalton. Dalton, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, buddy?
Sure. My name's Dalton Flanagan. I worked with Andy in Cambodia for 3 years. I started out as a primary educator. I'm currently a MYP design teacher and a digital literacy coach in Hong Kong. That's what I'm doing right now.
Cool. That sounds nice.
Well, we brought you in because you're the digital literacy expert. So we're doing an episode on coding to this episode. So we wanna get the expert advice. What is your perspective? Like, why is coding something that we should be teaching kids?
That's a good question. I think a lot of people have answered this online and other places, but I think you look around and you see more and more computers. Like, it takes a computer to run your car these days, or they even have computers in refrigerators now. So all of those little computers and things like that, they're going to need coding. I mean, pretty soon we might have them in our eyeglasses and things like that. So it's becoming more and more prevalent. We're going to need people who know how to speak the language of computers and be able to code and program them.
Yeah, that sort of reminds me of, I can't remember where it was, but I was talking to someone and they were explaining how their plumber, who in some far off country where it gets plenty cold, but that the plumber actually needed to go in to look at a boiler or something, and they actually needed coding skills and tech skills to be able to fix the boiler. And so even the traditional, even the jobs that you wouldn't expect to need coding, programming or tech skills are sort of changing up.
Yeah, is there
well.
Something going on with farmers at the moment that there's some kind of recent ruling in the States of like you have to, they're making tractors and stuff that farmers can't fix themselves.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And they've recently made a rule where like you can't, manufacturers can't do that to the farmers or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh.
Here in China, right next door to Hong Kong in China, they're having these huge drones that are spraying the fields with pesticides and things like that. And so those drones will also need that kind of like technical expertise and programming and things like that.
Yeah. Ever-changing world, right?
Yeah.
Something that sort of I explored by listening to another podcast as well is this whole idea of it's just a way of making sense of the world as well, that because there is so much code around us, it's a way of just understanding what is going on when you're using your phone, when you're using your fridge, when you're using whatever it is. And it so is.
Yeah, that's true as well. And I think I think you start thinking a little bit differently. If you learn how to program, you learn how to code, it teaches you like a more methodical way of thinking, like this happens and then this, you know, that causal way of thinking and breaking things down. It's also progressive, right? If you start off and you have an idea for a program, you make maybe a small little game that you're using, yeah. But then you have a bug in that game, you don't know how to fix it. If it's a small game, you can go through the lines of code and it's not too complicated to fix. But as you get better or more advanced at coding, you're writing bigger and more complex programs, then the bugs are harder and harder to find. So it keeps increasing in difficulty. I like that progressive aspect of it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, nice. It's definitely something that I've had a little tinker with some coding, and it's definitely something that can be frustrating as well, as that is finding those bugs in the system. But maybe that's because I need some more systematic thinking. Maybe I've got to upskill a bit there.
Need some scaffolding.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what about Dalton? Can you give us some, if teachers want to get into it, either they've got students that are beginners or they themselves are some beginners, where would you suggest, where do you get in on that? What's the starting point?
Well, I love the creativity of it. I love coming into something and realizing I can create any kind of world or story or thing that I want with the programming. So I really got engaged with things like early on with Scratch. It allows you to basically go in any direction you want. And it provides all the tools and framework for that. There's tons of tutorials and resources out there, cards that you can follow along with. The tutorials are built in on Scratch. And it connects and adapts with so many other pieces of equipment.
It brings all the different types of media in, right? So you can you can bring in the artistic, you can create your own animations, you can be adding sounds, you can add your own voice. Yeah, through you're the one that introduced me to Scratch and encouraged me to give it a go. And I've used it at home as well with the young ones and got them involved in taking a story. They love Dog Man. And they took one of the characters from the story of Dog Man, and then we created a new story for that character. And then we'd share it with the Scratch community, giving the kudos to Dave Pilkey and that. And it was like 5 and 7 year olds, and they really bought into that sort of creation, bringing a story that they know and love and bringing it alive in a different way, which was really nice.
And you mentioned that community, and that's a huge part of Scratch. I know you and I both got to visit where it began out in, actually all of us did, out in MIT in the in the lifelong kindergarten, and like you see how they work together, and then you see how the community of scratchers. If I've ever had a question, I've gone on the forum or turned to the community and asked questions. There's always been people there who are more than willing to help you out, and all the projects on there, people share, so you can remix them and copy them and you put your own twist on it. So yeah, that's something that you mentioned that I really love, that community of Scratch.
Cool. So if you're looking to start out, using Scratch is a great tool to use. It's got the scaffolding of the cards where you can like follow step by step. So I guess that could be a little bit of reading comprehension in there as well. But then you can also branch out and then start creating your own content in the ways that you want to. What if you have some students who are looking to push themselves a bit further, or maybe like myself, I'm teetering on the edge, I'm ready to look at, well, what's next with coding? Do you have any suggestions on that, Dalton?
I think it comes down to the individual person. I think the reason why people don't learn coding is because they get stuck on something, because it does get difficult, it does get frustrating, as you mentioned earlier. And if you're not engaged enough in a project, you hit that frustration, you're like, okay, I'm not going to go through 32 lines of like code to figure out the syntax there, you know, I'm just not going to do it. But so you have to find something that's like adaptable. So if you're doing it with a class, something that each student can find an interest in. One thing that I'm doing with seventh graders right now is we're using an app called Funkable, which it came off of App Inventor. So the people who started Scratch in MIT, there's also been some people who created App Inventor, which works on Android phones. And then a group of people broke off of that, and they started making Funkable, which works on Android and iOS. So it's block-based, so it doesn't require too much like knowledge of all the syntax and all the complicated text-based coding. But it does leave a lot of room for creativity, so you could make any kind of app that you wanted. So getting the students or whoever is learning how to code to buy into, they can create whatever they want to and they can take it in the direction they want to, I think is super important, because if they have that engagement, if they're going forward, when they hit that frustration or when you compile your program, it doesn't run, then you keep going with it because you really want to create something that's important to you.
Nice. That ties in nicely with our previous episode on agency as well, giving that voice and choice and ownership. So that's a nice little plug for the past episode. Nice, Dalton. Good job.
Yeah, you've been listening. Very good.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So is there anything else, like just to put you on the spot, is there anything else that maybe not coding, but that you've been excited about just sort of in your world of literacy coach as well, just because it's nice to catch up with you?
It seems like there's new stuff all the time. I know last time we hung out, I think I passed along a micro bit to you, which is really useful. It allows for coding, but it kind of takes it outside of the world of computer, right, into the physical world, and you can hook up a servo to it, or you could hook up lights to it and take it outside of that computer space into the physical world, you know, with the computing. I think that's helpful as well. And recently, somebody introduced me to something called a Meowbit. It's made by a company called Kittenbot, and I think it's from China, and it's like a microbit. The microbit's made by BBC, I think, and this is like a microbit, but it has a screen built onto it. It has a couple extra features, like it looks like a mini arcade game. It has an A and a B button, and then it has a directional pad with a screen. Yeah, it's really cool. And using Microsoft Make Code, you can spend maybe an hour or two, and you can actually create a handheld game that is your own that you can play with or share with other people. I haven't introduced it to the students yet, but we're thinking about trying it next week, and so that's something that I've seen that I'm pretty excited about.
Cool. I'd love to know how that goes. If you can flick me a message once you've done that.
Well, games seems to be like the secret weapon of coding, because like that's something that kids are into, right? Like it's not too hard to get them to pick up coding when you you can dangle that in front of them. Like, you get to make your own games, right?
Yeah. Nice. So, like, if people are interested in finding out more from you, you're my go-to expert when it comes to that sort of stuff. So do you have any way that people can get in touch with you or follow you or anything?
Of course, follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @DesertClimber because when I was in college and I first started using Twitter, I was living in the desert and I was rock climbing every chance I got. So I just kept it now that I've become a teacher because I was already connected to people on it, and so I kept the same @DesertClimber on Twitter.
Cool, nice, awesome, Dalton. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and yeah, and I'm sure we'll be in touch again a few episodes down the track.
Great, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, so Ando, we had a go at some coding in our class. You like that one?
Yeah.
Got a big smile on your face.
Yeah.
Love a nickname. We had a go with coding in the class this week, and we got some kids involved on it and tried some things out.
Yeah.
We got some reflections we want to listen to.
Yeah. I'd love to hear what they had to say.
All right, cool. Let's do that.
Robotic could take over the future. Maybe it could. And then, like, you need to code. So then, like, imagine if you're getting a robot car. It may be, and it's not powered by all yours, not powered, it's powered by a computer or an iPad. So they need to code so they know where to go or not. It's fun because you get to interact with the robot and see how they move. Because it's actually also amazing if they see how they move, because I've never seen them move before.
All right, so there were a couple of kids in one of my classes using some Lego Mindstorms, doing some coding.
Yep.
What'd you see?
I was really fascinated by the young fella there, and there were a couple of things that jumped out at me. And the first one was this sort of idea of how the robot was just sitting there. It was just a thing, I guess. And then it took the coding to bring it alive.
The
excitement, the newness of, like, bringing that to life. And then he sort of, like, explained a little bit later on about this idea of... he seemed really amazed that he actually understood how this thing worked, you know? Like, it's his understanding of the world around them, which we've sort of touched on briefly already, I believe. So, it was quite interesting to hear his perspective on that.
Yeah, and going back a little to last week, student agency, having, like, some sort of control and, making things happen is kind of a powerful thing for the kids as well. That's a big part of Papert's work is this idea. He took constructivism to constructionism, which basically adds in to that, literally building things with your hands and the value of that, which I think is maybe what that kid was expressing.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty neat that they were relatively aware of the real world applications. They're talking about cars going to have robots in them and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, I guess they're seeing that in their future.
That connection, that's really nice.
Yeah. You had some kids working on some stuff?
Yeah. So our context was that over a period of time, we've actually used CS First, which is like the Google platform, I guess. But it's... partnered with Scratch. So we looked at storytelling through coding in Scratch, and so this is their experience with it.
All right, let's listen.
Okay.
To me, it's something that helps me concentrate in writing, since I'm someone who doesn't really write a lot. Well, it helps me enjoy writing because you get to have some pictures and images that you can move around, and when that moves around, it's like predicting and visualizing. But the hard thing about it to me is the coding part, like the actual part that you attach the parts together, because you might get it all like wrong.
Yeah, and what happens if you get it wrong?
You have to redo.
Yeah.
I don't really like it because there's too many steps, and if you mess up a step, it doesn't, like, you mess up, like, almost the whole thing, and then, and when you try to do something, and it's quite hard, and you, and there's too many steps, and it's quite hard to remember, and we have to learn, and then, even though we watch videos, but I feel like there's some little bits that we don't know about, and sometimes we struggle, and then sometimes when I go around and ask people, no one answers, like, they're like, I don't know, so then, struggling.
Okay, my turn to chuck it at you. Nice. What are you hearing?
Wow, two wildly different experiences there.
but
that's cool. That's what it's all about. So they were obviously using it to write, right?
So
one of the girls was saying she helps it, finds that it helps her write. It helps her, I think, sort of structure her thinking a little bit, which was nice. And I really liked what she was saying about visualizing, because it does have that aspect, coding, of like, getting to see the fruit of your labor, yeah. I guess, and you kind of get rewarded by that as you're going, right? Oh, it's working, it's cool, it looks great.
Yeah.
And that's nice, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that within literacy and writing, having an audience brings out better work, I think, from the students, and having a published thing, and by publishing, I'm not talking about typing it up on a Google Doc, it's like, it's bringing a story to life, and like, sure, being able to use the sounds, being able to use the animations, and there's even a section on making it a, like, choose your own adventure for the reader. Nice. So, and it's just it can bring it alive for some of those kids, as we found out.
Yeah, and you were talking about the multimodal side of it, right? Which is a big sort of cognitive load kind of thing, right? Like being able to think about it in two different sort of ways. And
and I think as education moves forward, that is what literacy needs to be, because students are creators regularly. You know, they have access to these social media platforms, and right, they can create. They're inspired by YouTubers and that, and I think that, well, I'm a bit older, but I think that can be quite confronting for teachers sometimes, is that, well, this is the way that we've taught literacy,
yep,
but now it needs to be, is writing enough, or does it need to be with a different media as well?
Yeah, nice, cool. Mm. All right, what about the other girl that was not as keen?
Oh, yeah, I love that, and I loved where it actually went to as well. So obviously we like to try and balance things out and to explore the different sides of things.
And challenge ourselves too, right?
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Those frustrations are real when you're working through the code and you're finding something difficult. And I think maybe the challenge was she had a story in her head that she wanted to tell.
Yep.
And then maybe the coding was something that was actually getting in the way,
sure,
for that. So maybe her having a story first and then and then bringing it to life through coding may have made it.
Yeah, cool. Well, that does lead us pretty nicely into other kind of criticisms of the idea of using coding and things. So do you want to break some of that down for us?
Yeah, so one of the things that I sort of found out about during this journey was that there's this sort of thought that coding's going to, by humans, is going to become fairly redundant because the coding's going to actually be coded by the computers in the near future, and so that's a lot to say, but so what benefit does it have in the classroom if it's not going to be a job, I guess, in the future?
If that happens, we're screwed.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, it's all about like robots are taking over the jobs, but don't worry, because at least they need us to code them.
Yeah.
And what you're describing there is actually they're just going to cut us out altogether.
Yeah,
the robot's just going to do it. Oh, man.
Yeah, so bringing it back to Terminator 2.
Yeah,
really.
Big time.
So, yeah, nice. And then obviously something that we are continually struggling with is like, how do you actually just, this is a personal thing.
Sure.
How do you actually fit it into an already chocker program in an authentic way? Like, because that's, you know, what we're aiming for, is that there's a context there that the students are on board with and enjoy themselves.
I'm going to challenge that one a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Here and now, go on record. Because if you are doing it in an authentic way, you're not shoehorning it, because you're working with your curriculum that's there, right? Like, I don't think, I certainly would not agree with blocking out hours to teach coding.
Yeah.
Right. But if it's blended and kind of integrated with what you're doing and it's authentic, then it shouldn't necessarily be taking out time of anything, right?
Yeah. And I guess that if I actually reflect back on what I brought into the classroom, that sort of makes that statement defunct as well, right? Because it was bringing it in with the writing focus.
Yep.
And I thought it helped the students understand the whole idea of dialogue as well, and new speaker and new line, because that's the way that you code it. And it actually gave me a manageable way to look at their grammar as well, because you're looking almost sentence by sentence when you're adding dialogue in the way that we were. So it actually, you're right, it was
And even to kind of double-edged sword that.
Oh no.
Not only are you making the coding authentic by linking it to literacy, you're making the literacy more authentic too, because that's not something you want to teach in isolation either, right? Yep. Everything's connected. Yep. So
I accept your challenge.
All right, friend. Yeah, thank you. And then this is what we just saw with our student before, that not every kid is loving that. Not every kid's going to have inherent enjoyment out of this. So, you know, don't bring it in expecting every kid's going to love it or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
All right, cool. Should we take a little break and figure out what comes next?
Yeah, sure. Right, nice. Okay, so maybe we can start delving a little bit into our experiences. We have sort of talked about things as we've gone.
Yeah.
But I'd like to kick things off by talking about my dad, actually.
Sure.
And just how coding to us, well, when I think about coding, it seems like it's quite a new thing and something that sort of has been brought to the fore now. But actually, I was just the other day thinking back to my childhood, and my dad sort of was self-taught in a little bit of computer programming.
Yeah, right. He's what kind of stuff?
Not entirely sure. But
could have been Logo.
Yeah, could have been Granddaddy. it was really interesting, and I can totally see my dad in the way, his way of being and thinking in real life,
yep,
as like how it matches with the coding side of things, really systematic and that
logic
and the tackling problems, you know. He really enjoyed that.
Nice.
And he used that, and he created programs for work and like a kiwi fruit production line. Like, he created a computer program that could do bits and pieces, which I should probably find out more about. Sorry, Dad. But also, I think the greatest success that Dad achieved when it came to coding was that he used it to mess with me and my brother. And yeah, it was not good. So we had an old PC at home, and he managed to code it so that when we signed in, the first thing that came up was a maths program, and we had to answer like 5 or 7 questions correctly, including long division, which I'm not a fan of. And we had to answer that before we could play anything else. And so it's something that I think that he just taught himself. Was something that he used, like, both at home for enjoyment, tormenting his children, and also
he doesn't love that.
Yeah, and for his work life as well. So that's cool. I just thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah, I feel like that's really interesting. I feel like a lot of you hear, like, when people get into coding, like when they get right into it and they love it, they seem to get addicted to it, and it is like that. I think a lot of people have had that experience. But then equally, a lot of people kind of meet it and never like it, like never kind of fall in love with it, I guess. Okay. And that was probably my sort of experience at school, of like, you know, open up Notepad and code in HTML. Oh, I was like, this is boring as hell. Yeah. But something like Scratch, you know, really can skip straight to the fun part. You know, like, you get, oh, this is really cool. You might get really excited and start to fall in love with it. And then at that point, you can go ahead and, you know, learn the like programming in C or HTML or whatever, you know, the big ones, you know, after you've kind of gotten the taste for it and gotten hooked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my sort of experience, what I've been playing around with a lot last 12 months, is a Lego Mindstorms platform.
Oh yeah, nice.
And it's pretty awesome. I really have gotten into it myself, like loving tinkering with it, and the kids just love it.
Yeah.
And I think for me, the big part of it is this idea of the low floor, high ceiling kind of thing, that it's easy to get started. It's not complicated. Scratch is the same way, right? The the programming for it is very similar to Scratch. It's got the drag and drop blocks.
Yeah.
And it's not hard to get started. But once you've got the basics, it's just up to you of how far you want to take it, right?
So you don't have to follow instructions the whole time. You can sort of take it further and
totally, totally. But the complexity doesn't come from learning new complex codes. It comes from piecing together simple things, right?
Like
in a way. So I kind of the best way I can kind of describe that is like learning to use a pencil, right? Once you know how to use a pencil, which doesn't take very long. It's just, it's over to you, right? Like you can do a line with it or you can draw some amazing things depending on how much effort and time and whatever you want to put into it. And that's kind of the way I feel with the Lego. Like once you know how to make a motor spin and use a sensor, well, you can go ahead and program a robot that drives all the way around your classroom and does whatever it wants.
Yeah.
Well, that's all you have to learn. And that's what I think the kids really like about it is they... yeah, they feel like they're building on prior knowledge the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool.
All right, Andy Groom. Yep. So, talked about coding. Teachers out there wanting to give it a shot, what do you say? Do it?
Yeah, I say do it. I say do it. I say do it because it... it gives you an opportunity to explore something new.
Yeah, nice.
And it is satisfying. That first time is really satisfying to get amongst it and see how something works. And you can access it at all the different levels. And you don't have to always be the expert.
Nice.
You can learn from the kids as well, right? But I think for the kids, like what we're talking about, it's that whole idea of like you've got a system to solve problems. You can link it with your problem solving that you do in your maths maybe. We want them to be able to look for problems. We want them to create in different ways than what we've traditionally done, I guess.
Yeah, so nice. Yeah, I'm going to jump in on that as well. Yep. Like my experience has been like so much excitement about discovering this kind of stuff. And and part of that is me discovering alongside the kids, like you mentioned, and just those moments of like, oh, hey kids, I just figured out something really cool.
Yeah.
Check this out. And they're like, oh, that's exciting. Or yeah, like you said, the kids discovering something too. Like, hey, did you know there's a thing where you can make it do this or whatever? Like it just, there's a buzz of kind of some really cool discovery going on. And I love that.
Yeah. And I think that like, as Dalton was talking earlier, and I don't think it's something that I have quite managed to bring into the class yet, but it's something I want to keep trying, is that sense of community.
Yeah.
Yes, they have a community when they're working on it together. They will often use each other to spot problems and solve problems and help each other out, which is great to see. But also that wider community of Scratch where you can go in, you can take someone else's work and turn it and remix it and make your own work. And it also gets kids used to, I don't know, spotting good work or work that they like in other people and giving them positive feedback and giving them shout outs when they work on a remix and that. So yeah, I think that community aspect is something that I wanna try and grab a hold of in the coming weeks and years.
Yeah, and if the kids are aware that you are on a path of discovery as well, I think that empowers them a little bit to think that they're not too far behind and they're kind of experts as well, and they might, well, they're at least as an expert as you are, right? So they might be a bit more willing to either offer their advice to someone else, like I can show you that as well, or even to seek out a teacher, not necessarily always, to seek out a student for help as well as the teacher. Or go ahead and jump online. All right, cool. Well, we've pointed out a bunch of different things, some programs. I think we'll put some links in the episode description. What have we got? Scratch, CS First.
Yep.
The Lego Mindstorms, a couple of really good platforms there that we think people should give a shot at.
Yeah, and we're going to set up a Twitter account for this podcast as well. So as yet to be named, hopefully something hopefully along the lines of Risky Business.
At Risky Business Education, yeah, maybe, yeah, something like that. We'll see how we go.
We'd love to hear about, would love to answer any questions, but would also love to be inspired by the people out there as well, because it's the aim of the game for us, is to be able to talk these things through, try new things, help each other out, and be part of a bigger community for ourselves as well.
Yeah, nice one.
Nice. It's been a pleasure again, Coops. Try that out.
Thanks, Ando.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All good. That's it for Risky Business.
Okay, nice.